Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Grow Yourself. You know, today I am so thrilled. And honestly, this is the first guest that I've had back for a second time. And I can't tell you how thrilled I am to have once again Leslie Lindsay Davis. Leslie, she's really a remarkable author. She really is, whose personal journey of transformation is just really beautifully captured in her new book, The Journey from Failing to Healing. Leslie's story is one of resilience, courage, profound self-discovery, and frankly, through her candid narrative, she invites all of us, and we're going to ask her about this, to embark on our own journey of healing and growth. As a writer and speaker, Leslie's ability to intertwine, let's say, life's challenges with spiritual wisdom makes her not just a terrific author, but really a beacon of light and hope for all of us who have been through times of darkness or who might be in darkness, or if you ever find yourself in darkness. I would say Leslie and her book is the person that you want to lean into. So join us now as we explore the depths of her inspiring journey and the powerful lessons that it holds for all of us. So ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome, you know, not just my guest, but I would also say my friend, Leslie Davis. Leslie, thank you so much for being here again. It's been a minute, and I have to admit, I'm just geeked that you're here again.
Well, I am so excited to get to talk to you because not only did we have a discussion a couple of years ago, I can't believe it.
Has it really been 2 years?
Yes, but you are one of the podcasts that I listen to on a regular basis.
Oh,
so
man.
I am just, to use your word, geeking out. But here I am. I could say, oh, I get to be a guest on a podcast I listen to because your message is always so inspirational. And it always, I always end the listening to the podcast saying, I can take that and I can do something with it. So anyway, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me back. And yes, I do consider you to be one of my friends.
Thank you so much. And so, you know, this new book, it's really fascinating. I have had a chance to read it. And you know, I think when I emailed you back after, you know, I had read at least much of it, my first thought truly was, wow, you know, it's just such a powerful book. And you really incorporated a lot of things like your faith and scriptures and other things, these other ideas into it. And sort of, you know, that was a big thread that rolled through it. So I guess I will start perhaps with the obvious question, and that is, you know, what inspired this particular book?
Well, truthfully, this particular book was actually written before You Can't Eat Love, and it is the backstory. It's how I arrived to be the person that I was, that I tell about and help other people with on their journey to understanding that it's not that they have a myself-sized hole in their heart. It's simply that they don't love themselves, and guiding people to learn how to love themselves and discovering their very best friend. And if you read You Can't Eat Love, you say, well, you know, she had it all together and it's really cool that she did these things. And I give a lot of tips and tricks and stories and anecdotes on how I did things. But truthfully and honestly, just like anything else, you know, you hear people talk about they are an overnight success, right?
Yeah.
And when you ask the question, they'll tell you, well, yes, it took 5 or 10 years to become an overnight success.
I
make it look a little tiny bit easy in You Can't Eat Love.
I see.
But the hard work of the hard work is what I talk about in The Journey from Failing to Healing. And the subtitle to that is First Attempts in Learning Lead to Healthy Emotions and Loving Yourself.
Say that one more time.
first attempts in learning lead to healthy emotions and loving yourself.
Very interesting.
So that's why the title is The Journey from Failing, because I used to think I was a failure, but then I understood it was simply a first attempt in learning. Those issues, those situations led me to developing healthy emotions and loving myself, or healing. And I had written the book and I was ready to publish it. And God told me one day when I was walking out in the back, he said, "No, you wrote this book, but this is not the one I need you to publish right now." And he told me I needed to publish and write You Can't Eat Love. And back in September, he said, "Now it's time for you to put The Journey from Failing to Healing out into the world. You are ready to share the deepest, darkest secrets." Because
I see.
I don't know if you could tell, but I really dug down really deep.
Yes, you did.
In that writing, and pretty much bared it all.
Did you know? I mean, that's not easy to do, and so if I understand you, then you're saying that your first book kind of, you know, I don't know, did it acclimate your heart and mind to then be able to, you know, or did you, it set up your heart and mind to then be able to then go deeper with it?
Well, what it did, writing the second one, the You Can't Eat Love, what it did was it allowed me to gain courage and confidence.
Okay.
Because before I published You Can't Eat Love, or as I was publishing, I kept telling myself, nobody wants to hear this story. Nobody cares. Nobody's interested. You know, who do you think you are? And all of that self-doubt, self-criticism, all of that noise was going on in my head. And not to brag, but we are more than 3 years after You Can't Eat Love was originally published, and it remains in the top 25 in a category on Amazon, and remains in the top 100,000 of all books on Amazon. And there are over 7 million books on Amazon.
Oh my goodness.
So what God understood was that I needed the time to gain the confidence and the courage and understanding that my words do mean something to the other Leslies that are out there in the world.
Very interesting.
As a consequence, when I picked The Journey from Failing to Healing back up in September, he kept challenging me. I know you can go deeper on this. I know that you can be more revealing. And oh my goodness, we had so many arguments. But at the end of the day, when I would go back and reread the words that I had added and edited and all of that, I can tell you there were times when I was laughing. There were times when I was crying.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I said, if I'm having this reaction, I can only imagine the reaction that the reader is having. But I needed to have the courage and the confidence to believe in my own words. So that's why the time needed to pass.
I've never heard something like that. And I would imagine now with my brain, if for me to come to understand and hear that discernment, you know, Leslie, I need you to, you know, put this book out first, sort of the broader aspect, I guess you could say, and then dig deeper. You know, first of all, I'd have to deal with all 10 voices to figure out, okay, which one are you, God? You know, let's start with that. But it doesn't sound like it would be necessarily an easy discernment, because it does seem to me. But what I also hear you saying is that God set it up with, you know, the first book, which was, you know, and then perhaps through this process of realizing how many people accepted You Can't Eat Love, and that in and of itself gave you confidence, right? That to hear from people and then say, okay, yeah, I'm ready to go deeper now, as God put it.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I have people reaching out to me all the time saying, I can't believe that you knew that I felt this way. The,
oh, wow.
you know, the words that you said are exactly what I was feeling. How did you know? I mean, I hear that one all the time. How did you know?
Yeah.
And how I knew is because I am just like so many other people out there. The biggest difference between me and them is I actually, you know, put my hands on the keyboard, put the words, you know, on a virtual page, and then hit put this out into the world. You know, that's the only difference. And it did take time for me to really accept my words do mean something to somebody else. So then I knew that I could reveal, I guess that's the best word, I could reveal where the courage came from. I could reveal where the insight came from. And I could also show where I learned how to love myself, because I don't know about you, Kevin, but so many times we forget that we are loved. Even if we think nobody else loves us, there is one who loves us regardless of what we do, what we say, or anything else, and that's God. And it took really putting that book together to revisit those times when he revealed how much he did love me. And that's what that book really is letting you know, all the yous out there in the world who are listening right now, letting you know that no matter what, there is one who loves you. And yes, you can use his wisdom, his words, to pick yourself up and to keep moving forward, because you're never alone. And that's the other thing. You're never, ever alone.
But Leslie, how do you get to that place? You know, I mean, I can even speak for myself. What is it that keeps people from understanding? Because I will admit that I would say for me, and might even say that for a lot of people, I ran a Sunday school class for 10 years, and it was based around certainly, you know, scriptures in the Bible, but it was really I really facilitated questions, you know. And so as a result of that, it wasn't like lessons where I would bring lessons and say this, you know, I might just bring a question and, you know, ask everybody sitting around. And then of course we would relate it to the Bible, but having facilitated it that way, I heard a lot of people speak about this notion, and would lead me to believe that it's not just me, but a lot of people don't understand the love of God. And so one, what stops us from understanding how much he loves us? And, you know, what stops us, and how do you eventually get to that place of understanding it?
Well, and that's a great question, because you're right. A lot of people equate God with a parent figure.
Yes.
And so many people have not very good parent figures. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
My parent figures were okay. We'll just put it there.
Okay.
But it took me realizing that the only way that I could keep going was to control what I could control. And the only person I was in control of was me. So that was the first thing. But the second thing was, I felt so desperate to be loved that I was doing all kinds of things, you know, just to get that love and that approval. And it really and truly came down to one morning when I was reading certain scriptures, and I read about 10 scriptures every morning, read the same 10 scriptures. And on this particular morning, I was reading Psalms 147:3, and it says, to paraphrase, he heals my broken heart and binds up all my wounds. And I literally paused, and I talk about this in the book. I paused And I went, wait, hold on. What did he just say? And I backed up and I read it again. He heals my broken heart and binds up all my wounds. And then I said, whoa. So I backed up. I said, God heals my broken heart and Jesus binds up all my wounds. And I want to tell you the torrent of tears that just started racing down my face.
Oh my.
Because it was in that moment I understood that no matter how broken my heart was, no matter how unloved I felt, no matter any of that stuff, in that moment, God had healed my heart. It still had all the scars and all that stuff from being abandoned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it was healed. And Jesus was binding my wounds, which means that he was legally covering them, protecting them. And the chapter is called You Can't Have Too Many Band-Aids. But he was, you know, binding all those wounds, you know, all those words that had been said to me that were not helpful, all the times that I had been hurt, all those things, you know, he was covering them, he was binding them. And it was liberating, absolutely liberating to understand I didn't have to do anything, absolutely nothing. Because I was healed, the wounds were bound. The wounds were not healed. They still had to, you know, continue on. I still had work to do. And some of the wounds may never be healed until I, you know, pass on to the next world. But that doesn't matter. So I say to the people who are struggling with understanding that God is a loving Father, you know what? That's okay. That's okay. But I challenge you to go and read that verse. Psalms 147:3, because he is telling you that he is healing your broken heart. The scars aren't gone. The scars are there. And he's binding up all those wounds. Yeah.
And so how does the person, and this would be probably me, you know, but how does the person who just doesn't feel like God is moving fast enough in the healing process, you know, what do they do about that during this time?
You argue with him.
Mm-hmm. I heard you say that earlier. You had arguments with God. I'm like, okay, all right. I don't know how'd that work out.
you argue with him.
Interesting.
And on the journey that I went on, I, you know, changed my perspective of God, and I don't talk about this in the book, but the way that I saw God prior to all of this was I saw him as a very stern, very cold, very rigid, envision an Ebenezer Scrooge type person, very angular and, you know, seething with anger and all of this lightning bolts, Zeus type being thrown down. But as I went on the journey and as I read that verse, I started seeing him. The easiest way to describe it is the original Coca-Cola Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
I see him, you know, as a softer person with the glasses. And on occasion, he slides the glasses to the end of his nose and he looks over his glasses at me and says, you know, Leslie, really, really. So I say, start looking for the kinder version, you know, rewrite your image of God. And I do argue with him. And you know what? That's okay. Because the great thing about God is he is available 24/7. And he's never, ever too busy to listen. And it's okay if you argue with him.
Yeah.
He may or may not answer you. He may or may not say, you know what? It's okay if you want to argue with me. You know, go ahead and argue with me. It's all right. Because he wants you to have a relationship with him. And when we have relationships with great friends, don't we just simply argue with them? Maybe not looking for an answer, maybe not looking for a solution. We simply want somebody to hear us. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And this is where then, you know, God's love that we can't comprehend, there might be something that we say that truly offends the friend, but for God, his love goes way beyond that, that you can't, but I will ask, so then a person of faith, though, while you are arguing with God and while you are taken on this journey, I mean, certainly Job comes to mind, that at the same time, so as a person of faith, you also always have, right, in the back of your head that still things happen in God's time because there are things that we can't understand. You know, a great example would be your books. You know, I mean, why wouldn't one argue that this book should come before this book or whatever the case might be? But I think to your point, you may not even fathom why, you know, you can't eat love needed to come first. You just can't see that the future outcome of that, right? So you have to maintain a level of faith while you're feel like it's not quite going in the way that I think it does, but I trust God, right?
Exactly. But the other part of that is if you envision all of us standing in front of a pond and we are rocks being thrown into that pond and the ripples go out. Let's say you have something that you're really wanting to do or desiring or whatever it is, but you have this wish. God needs to line everything and everybody up so that the ripples intersect at just exactly the right time. And until those ripples can intersect at just exactly that right time, it doesn't make any difference what you want or wish. Because we don't live in a bubble, do we? You're not over in your pond and I'm not over in my pond. We're all in the same pond, right?
Yes.
So let's consider that maybe whatever your desire or dream or wish is requires somebody else to be doing something. And that's part of the plan. And that person isn't doing what they need to be doing in order for their ripple to intersect with your ripple at exactly the right time.
Wow.
Or let's say the consequence of your desire or wish is going to cause somebody else's pond, you know, ripple in the pond to not intersect. And that person needs to accomplish something, you know, at a future date. So if we start looking at it like that, then we can understand better why things don't happen in our time or why they don't happen at all.
Wow. I mean, you know, first of all, the way that you explained it really pulls that together in a simple way to understand it. But at the same time, I hear you saying that there's a complexity that we cannot get. And you just explained it in very simple terms, but the fact that God doesn't make something happen in your life at this moment, you know, because something's happening in a year that has nothing to do with you, really. It's just that, as you say, these ripples need to intersect at the right time. And who but God could create such a, I mean, I can't even comprehend how. Let's even break it down. Let's say you have 100 encounters between the time that something happens to you and how God is going to let that ripple effect affect someone. Of 100 different things need to come together perfectly at the same time for it all to work in the order that God believes it needs or God knows that it should work. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
That's incredible.
Exactly right.
What an incredible idea.
If we keep trying to push,
you
know, for something to happen when it's not time yet, well, yeah, it may happen, but it's not going to happen well. I mean, for example, how many times have you pulled a cake or cookies out of the oven before it was time?
Yeah.
How'd that turn out?
Yeah.
Or a roast. You know, you pull a roast out before it's time. How'd that work out?
Yeah. And you know it when at some given point you're going, wow, I should have been a little more patient, or it was just the wrong time or the wrong ingredient, whatever it is. That's a fascinating look. I honestly, it really helps me to hear that and understand that, because I am one of those people that it different aspects of my life, I'm going, you know, God, I don't know. And I say this humbly, obviously, but it's something like, God, I just don't know how else to put this. I don't know what exactly I'm supposed to say for this to be manifested. And it might be something that I believe I'm being patient with. Maybe months or years go by. And I'm like, and I start to feel I must be asking in the wrong way.
Or you're feeling unheard.
Or feeling unheard as well. No, that you're exactly right.
But how about if you were to do a little bit of a flip? Instead of constantly focusing on that one thing that you've requested that hadn't come to pass yet, I'm using the word yet, instead of focusing on that one thing that hadn't happened yet, how about if you start looking at the things that have happened? I'm not talking about counting your blessings or anything like that. I'm simply saying, you know, observe around you in a day. Well, this happened. Oh, that's amazing. Or, you know, reflect back a year or so. You know what? That happened. Thank you, God. Thank you for, you know, helping me do whatever. And you would be surprised as you focus on the things that have happened.
Wow.
How much closer you may or may not get to the thing that you wish to happen.
Wow.
But
yeah.
Your focus is going to become one of optimism rather than the expectation that God is never going to grant you whatever the heck it is that you're wanting. Now, I'm not saying don't argue with God and don't say, you know, look, God, I'm sick and tired of waiting for this, and I really know that you can do something about it, so would you hurry up and get busy? But after having said that to God, who is a kind and loving, gentle and patient parent, after having said that, you know something, God, last week when this happened, I forgot to tell you, thank you so much for making sure that I did not enter the freeway 5 seconds earlier, because I would have been tangled up in that traffic mess yeah. that happened over there, and my car would have been totaled,
yeah.
and it would have been a really bad situation.
That's beautifully said, and it makes me think of this, that maybe the reason I or we don't see things that are happening around us right now is because we are so focused on the future. It's kind of like trying to watch television and listen to somebody talk at the same time.
It doesn't go well.
It doesn't go well. We either hear what they're saying and miss what's on television, or we catch what's on television and don't hear them, but it's very hard to do both. And so I think it follows that if I am so focused on what the ultimate outcome is, then I'm missing the small things that are happening, to your point.
And that's one of the things that I do talk about in You Can't Eat Love. You know, start celebrating the wins, no matter how big or small they are. Celebrate yeah. all the wins. So the same thing happens, mm-hmm. you know, if we start looking at the things that God is doing in our life, no matter how big or small. You wouldn't believe the things that I thank God for all the time. I thank him, you know, for the fact that I got up 5 minutes earlier because, you know, this happened and all those. But if we start focusing on thanking him for the little tiny things, then those big things become big celebratory moments. But the things that we are wishing for, they don't become so razor sharp in our focus.
Right.
Instead, we start seeing ourselves possibly moving slowly towards them, where they're kind of, you know, softly out of focus, but we're getting closer.
Wow.
And yet we feel at peace and satisfied because we are seeing what he is doing in our life rather than seeing what he isn't doing in our life.
You know, I'll never forget many years ago, say 10 years ago, there was a beautiful snow that took place here in Murfreesboro in the Nashville area. And my wife woke me up and early in the morning, she said, Kevin, you have to look outside, how beautiful it is. And let's just walk down the street. And so we started walking down and I did, I grumbled at first and then we started walking. And so as we're walking this way, to my right are houses that had all the telephone poles. And I remember thinking, I don't remember if I said anything to her, but I remember thinking in my mind that those telephone poles are really ruining it for me. I mean, because here's this beautiful white everything and then these telephone poles. So we get down, we live on a cul-de-sac and turn around the other way. And now I'm looking to the right and I see all this with no telephone poles. And it stunned me. that how beautiful it was. And I remember thinking, Kevin, you completely missed it, that walk down, because you were so focused on what was wrong that you completely missed the beauty. I mean, I obviously saw it on the way back, but such a simple distraction, though, makes me miss the bigger picture. And that's what was happening. So let me ask, Leslie, so your experiences, you know, first of all, when it comes to this book and what you wrote in the book, were there sort of pivotal moments along the time in this journey that, I guess you could say, spawned the book, if you will, that or that you've identified and put in the book?
The book started out as simply me jotting things down on pieces of paper. And then as the thoughts would kind of percolate in my head, you know, they started growing and growing. So I would sit down at the computer and spew out all these words. And they actually lived in my computer for 3 years. They just sat there in my computer. The book is not really a read from start to finish and you get a whole story. It is a collection of 12 separate stories.
Yes.
I guess is the easiest way to describe it. And they were the consequence of a thought would occur to me because I was in the midst of something, or I was inspired by something, or I saw something. And so then I would jot it down on a piece of paper, and then it would start expanding itself. The amazing, interesting thing was when I picked it up 3 years later, back in October, September, I was able to see that I had just really skimmed the surface. And that was where God started challenging me and saying, okay, you know, this is what you did, but you need to go deeper. Let's go deeper. And I would think that I would be finished. And he would say, no, we need to go deeper. Keep going deeper. So the beauty of the whole thing for me personally was, if I would have published it 3 years ago, you would have just been skimming the surface. And I don't think you would have the same visceral reaction to it.
Yeah, I get
but
that.
Because it sat and I was further down my journey than I was when I originally did it.
I see.
I took God up on his challenge to really go deep. And I do hope that you do have a visceral reaction to a lot of the stories.
Sure. Is there something that you can, it's kind of put you on the spot, but one of those places that you felt God saying that you need to go deeper? Is there an example that you can put forward?
The main thing was, well, actually two main places, the story about the elephant and, you know, how I felt with the, you know, regard to the trip and all of that, because I kept trying to focus on the surface stuff. And he said, no, we need to know more about how you were feeling and what thoughts were going through your mind and that. And then at the end,
tell us about the elephant thing, though. Oh. I mean, a little bit, would you?
Well, it was so crazy because I was working at a job where it was literally killing me. And seriously, I did not have a clue where I was going until I was absolutely on the plane. And my husband did keep saying, you're going where? And why are you going? And I seriously considered getting on the plane and flying back home. And it really and truly was seeing the elephants running on the savannah when I heard God say, you know, look, you see them, it's going to be okay. And I did keep telling myself, I can always go home later. But I didn't realize, and I guess I can't really explain it in the words in the book, I'm terrified of heights, for one. And this elephant was, I kid you not, at least two stories tall. I challenge anybody to get a tape measure and challenge me anything else. It was at least two stories tall. And when I got on the elephant, finally struggling to get on the elephant with, it was a joke. Like I said, it looked more like Dumb and Dumber. I could have won America's Own Funniest Videos. But when that elephant stood up,
oh my goodness,
the feeling that raced and rushed through me was almost indescribable, because, and I say in the book, you know, it felt like, you know, the Grinch in the heart growing. That was how I felt. I could feel life coming back wow. into me. And I had tears, even now it brings me to tears. I had tears going down my face because I could hear God saying, look, 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 this is so amazing. This is, I have more of this for you. And it was just an incredible feeling. And it still is an incredible feeling. And then in the whole while, the leader of the group is down on the ground screaming at me, your husband's going to kill me if you fall off. Well, I didn't really care about that at that point in time. But I have no memory of getting off of the elephant. That's how enraptured I was with the being on the elephant. I have no wow. memory of getting off the elephant. And then at the end of the book, when I'm talking about the king, you know, and how he needs to be on his horse and just stand there mm-hmm. and let everybody do the fighting, that was such a liberating moment for me, because we did really have the situation in the family where, I mean, it's still bad, but like the king, you know, it's not my battle to fight, so I can release it. I may try and pick it up on occasion. I may try and pick it up on occasion. But then God reminds me, hey, you know, who's going to fight this battle? Are you going to fight this battle, or am I going to fight this battle? And I say, you know, no, God, I got other things to do. So then I, you know, go back to my castle and you know, do my thing. But the journey has been one that it has allowed me so many opportunities. You know, I've gotten to meet people like you. And hopefully now that the book, The Journey from Failing to Healing, is out, someone out there will read it and discover what an amazing person they are, and that God really does love them just as they are, exactly as they are. They don't need to change a single thing about themselves. Just understand who they are and whose they are. Because as I say, you know, you are the children of God, the Most High King, which makes all of us princes and princesses. And nobody else is above us. Nobody.
You know, I don't want to gloss over a very interesting point that you just brought up a moment ago. And you were talking about how, I'll sort of paraphrase it, that you know God is there to fight certain battles for you. And then you said something about, and every now and then I'll pick it up and I'll jump in the fight again. It reminds me, and I've seen maybe over the years a video or two of, you know, of a parent, let's, you know, of a father, you know, getting ready to fight somebody somewhere in a store or a restaurant because that person's being aggressive. And the little kid, his little kid behind him, you know, comes running out from behind him and takes a swing at the man, and the little kid's just a toddler and misses and falls to the ground, and the father essentially makes the motion for them to move back, you know, this is my fight, I got this. And you kind of describe the idea between, you know, faith and our tendencies as human beings, that, you know, maybe viscerally or egotistically or whatever it is, we want to stand up and fight a battle, but God is there as our father saying, you know, you're going to fight this? You know, it probably won't work out, so, you know, let me take it. And in my head, I see these two things happening, and it's the difference between our flesh, our understanding, our desire to go fight something versus going, that's your battle, isn't it?
And what I came to understand is it freed up my mind to do something else.
Yes.
Because
fight something else.
when we are busy trying to figure out how to get back at somebody or how to fight somebody, think of how much brain power that really and truly takes. Think how much physical energy it takes to do that. And in all that time of waste of spending that time trying to be extremely creative of, you know, the revenge or taking care of fighting, whatever. Mm-hmm. What are all the things that we are not doing? I mean, look at all the stuff that you do. You speak to really interesting people all the time. You have all these other things that you do in your life. You're an amazing creative person. Can you imagine if you were spending all of your time and energy trying to figure out how to get back or how to take revenge or how to fight all the people and the battles you need to fight? You would have zero time or energy for the things that bring you joy. And that was what I came to understand. Now, what I don't talk about in the book is what was difficult for me, and this is where I sometimes see God laughing. I live 1/3 of a mile from the people, the relatives in the chapter that I talk about, 1/3 of a mile. So I constantly pass by them, pass by the house, pass by them. So it was almost as if God was saying, look, I know that you don't do this very well, so I'm going to give you a test, and I'm going to make sure that you are constantly exercising that muscle.
Interesting.
Because when we exercise muscles, they get stronger, right?
Yeah.
So being that close, I was constantly having to go past, and I would start, you know, that I want to do this, and I want the, and God would say, excuse me, and I'd say, oh, sorry, and then I'd, you know, bring it on back down again. So it finally, you know, years pass. I finally am at the point where 95% of the time I leave him alone. I'll pick it up on occasion and God will say, are you fighting or am I fighting today? You know, okay, God. Because as I say in the book, you know, he's way more creative than I ever dreamed of being.
Yeah.
So we just like anything else, let's exercise the muscle. Let's let God fight the battle. Mm-hmm. And again, remember the ripples in the ponds, things have to cross. In this case, we don't want the ripples crossing, but, you know, let's let God control the water, not us.
Wow, man, that's so powerful. You know, so in your book, you emphasize the importance of embracing vulnerability and exploring the unknown. Can you offer some practical strategies or insights for listeners to, you know, who may be struggling with these, you know, concepts in their own lives?
But when I talk about embracing vulnerability, I don't mean to literally go to somebody and expose your underside.
Fair enough.
Not at all. What I mean is embrace your vulnerability, get raw, get real, get honest with yourself. Now, how do you do that?
Yes.
The way that I did it was I started having written conversations with myself and God. Some people call it journaling. I don't call it journaling. I call it writing in a notebook, only because I have this thing against journaling. It's okay. But start having honest written conversations with yourself and with God, saying, one day I was really angry with somebody. This is a true story. One day I was really angry with somebody and I was dancing around my genuine anger. And God said, excuse me, who are you trying to lie to? Because we do a really good job of lying to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I paused and I wrote this. I said, God, I'm trying to lie to myself. Well, we are three people, me, myself, and I. Me and myself want to protect us, but I sees everything. And I said, well, you know, God, I'm trying to cover this up. And he said, stop. I know what you're really thinking. So you need to get honest with you. I said, oh. So I went on and I wrote, I am really angry with this person. I hate them in this moment. I wish that they would hurry up and die. And I mean, I wrote my true, honest, real feelings in that moment. And that's what I'm talking about. Get vulnerable. Be honest with yourself about what you are really thinking, what you are really feeling. The more we hold back on that, the more it bubbles in the background and it prevents us from feeling liberated that we can enjoy our life. Because how many times do we hold back those feelings of resentment, but we can feel them pounding on that door? Well, when we have those written, honest, vulnerable conversations, you'll discover that not only are you having an honest conversation with God, and a conversation is a two-way thing, you will be hearing him talking back. And I write down what he says, and I write down what I say back to him. And sometimes I have conversations between me and myself, but I'm being honest. I'm not holding anything back. Nobody, I don't reread my words, because just like a conversation with a good friend, you don't have a recording of it. My kids are going to think I'm crazy unless I burn everything before I die. But the bottom line is, have that honest conversation, get real, get vulnerable with yourself, and stop lying about what you really feel. God already knows.
Yeah, well, good
but
point.
But even more importantly, you already know.
So, again, I say this sincerely. It's a very powerful thought. It does go beyond just the idea of journaling or just writing in a book or something like this, because as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking to myself, you know, and I don't journal or really write a lot. It's one of the things I wished I did more, but I don't. Whatever. My point is, though, that I could see where I might write something and not want to really say that out loud, because something as simple as, you know, you don't want to say something that you just, you know, like you just said, I want this person to die sooner than later. I mean, oof, that'd be hard for me to get out of my mouth. Or, you know, but you don't have to qualify it to yourself. You know, you already know that this doesn't mean, you know, it can mean all kinds of things. But the point is that you're saying you have to release all of that, all of those things that would inhibit you from being honest, like your perceptions of what is polite or impolite, you know, your perceptions of what your daughter would say if she read this, all of these things, which you're saying, let it go, just write it and get it out of your head. And with that comes a freedom that, you know, it's not whether you meant it or not, but it's what you were thinking and feeling. And that's the liberation, is letting it go.
Well, you let it go, but you also stop lying to yourself, and you stop lying to God. And I feel like when we lie to either God or to ourselves, that puts up a roadblock.
Very good.
Because you spend so much time trying to keep the lies straight and trying to keep, you know, the lies in that little tiny box that they don't want to live in. So when you finally say out loud, not necessarily, I don't
understand.
Say it out loud,
yeah,
because people would, you know, look at you crazy.
Yeah.
Think, you know, you're a really horrible person. Yeah. But when you're finally honest with yourself in that writing, and I say writing because it gets it out of your head onto paper, the hamsters are off the wheels and they go back to the pet shop. It is, as you said, it's liberating. It is really liberating, but it also sets you down a path. Okay, what else am I lying to myself about? What else am I hiding behind? And it really and truly does free that log jam that might be stopping you from having an honest conversation with God. Now, me personally, I talk to him all day long, and there are days when I tell him, look, I know you're tired of hearing from me, but I'm sorry, I just need to talk to you. And unlike your very best friend in the whole wide world, you know, which is you, God tends to be a little bit more patient with you than you do with yourself. So let's go on a campaign to get people to understand they can be vulnerable with themselves, and they can do it safely. And if they're afraid that someone is going to read their words, let's figure out a way to send them a box of matches so they can just burn them up.
Burn it. You know, I'm just trying to even just center in, focusing on the big point that it's just, you got to get it out of your spirit. You got to get it out of your heart. You know, to your point, you know, you've got to get to a place where you are fully disclosing to yourself and to God, albeit he already knows, but fully disclosing what's on your mind, that you can't say half of it and feel like you have liberated yourself. You got to really put it out there. I think that's hard for a lot of people, but I think you're exactly right. And you are on a campaign to do this, aren't you?
I am on a campaign to do this.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, I want to run through this real quick. I'm looking at your table of content. Let me just kind of drag it over here. Are you going to drag over here or not? And kind of just roll through some things that, you know, really piqued, you know, my attention. But I'm going to maybe ask you just a comment, just a little bit. I won't go into the subs, but just sort of the main, I guess you could say the main title, if you will. Hold on, mm-hmm. I just clicked on something and lost.
Don't you love computers?
I know. I clicked on a link and it took me all over the place. Okay. So we heard you talk about how I found myself from the back of an elephant. Very mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. But the next one then says, it's all good. It says life can be like shampooing your hair.
Yes. Well, that was a story. My mother died 2 weeks before my oldest child was born. And then shortly before his first child was born, he and his wife decided they didn't want to have a relationship with me. So that's where it was that wash, rinse, repeat cycle. And there were different things that happened in that span of time where it just felt like a wash, rinse, repeat.
I see.
I even talk about standing in front of a window with the rain pouring down outside. And I say, mm-hmm. I'm standing in front of a different window and the rain is falling and the tears are falling. So that's where that is.
I see. You know, this next one, I had to do a double take and I had to think about it before I read on. A short tale about raw toast. I had to thought, what is raw toast? I love it though. Your titles, your chapter titles are just brilliant. So tell us about that. A short tale about raw toast. What is raw toast?
Raw toast is bread.
Bread. And then, you know, people need to go read your book because then the next sort of the sub one is the birth of raw toast.
Yeah. Well, it is a true story about a conversation, you know, that my husband and I had. And, and I don't want to give too much about that one away, but it really is based on a conversation that we had. And he was really and truly looking for something about, you know, to go with his dinner. And so I suggested raw toast. But then I go on to remembering, you know, how many times I failed. And so here we bring in the title, you know, the fail.
Yeah.
And I'd added the note to the reader in that chapter much, much later. Where I said the editor didn't want me to keep saying the word fail. They thought that it would just be too hard on the reader. And I was like, no. And I leaned into the editor's comment at first, but I kept saying, no, no, no. So, you know, I'd say that even in, you know, the editing of it, I failed, but I didn't.
So I'm just going to read one more because some of the others, you've actually talked about them. And but I wanted to ask you about the pre-flight instructions are important. I mean, I think any of us can kind of get that at the beginning, but tell us about that a little bit.
It was an epiphany for me to understand, despite what society and even what my family and parents taught, you know, that mm-hmm. that you don't put yourself first. And we hear over and over again, you know, that self-care, that you need to put yourself second, you need to put your children first, put your husband first, put all these things first. But really and truly, at the end of the day, if we don't put our own oxygen mask on first,
we
are going to be laid out in the aisle and we're going to be of no use to anybody. Yes, we will have helped all these people, but where are you going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hard concept for a lot of people. It's a little bit counterintuitive, I guess you could say, but you're exactly right.
It's counter-societal.
Yes, yes.
It's counter-societal.
Okay, fair enough. No, I'm with you there. ultimately, Leslie, what do you want people walking away? And you may have already said it, but what do you want people who are reading the book or who read the book to walk away knowing, feeling, doing, you know, especially those who are going through their own struggles?
What I want them to walk away knowing is that God is an amazing, kind, loving, accepting, regardless of your circumstance, your situation. He is an amazing, loving Father who doesn't judge you, who doesn't have any huge expectations from you. The only expectation that he has is that you love him and that you trust him enough to go to him when you feel as if there is nobody listening, because he's always listening. And I cannot tell you how many times I have cried out in the middle of the night saying, please, you know, God, help me. I can't do this anymore. He's right there. So I want people to walk away seeing God differently. Or if they already have a relationship with God, I want them to walk away with a deeper relationship with God. And not only that, but I want them to start feeling that they are able to have a conversation with other people about how amazing God is, and let other people know that he is this kind, amazing, loving Father who never judges us and who is always waiting, no matter how far away we get.
And even for many Christians, including myself, and I said it earlier, sometimes we just don't, we really can't fathom that, but you'll never get even a partial understanding of what you just said without developing the relationship. And to develop the relationship, there's got to be some level of faith. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, I know we like to prove things. We want concrete evidence. But if that's the case, you don't, you know, there's reasons behind that as well from God as to why we don't know all of these things. But the more you pursue this journey, the more you come to understand exactly what you're saying. I might also add that just knowing you and having read, you know, Can't Eat Love and now this one, that you're a trusted soul that people should listen to.
Well, thank you so much.
I mean that. You know, well, listen, you've gone through a lot in your life. God has taken you or allowed you or however you shape that. And now you've sorted a lot of it out and you're sharing what the rest of us, you know, maybe can understand without going through it, you know.
But that's my hope, that you don't have to go through it.
No, that's exactly right. Well, listen, Leslie, would you share now with the viewers and the listeners where they can find your book and where they can find you and any of your social media? Of course, we'll put it all in the show notes, but I really like to hear it out loud.
But you can find me, the easiest place to find me is on my website, youcanteatlove.com, and that's where you can find out all about me, my books, and you can even, if you want to connect with me, you can connect with me there. I do speak, so if you want to connect with me about speaking, youcanteatlove.com, and my social media is all youcanteatlove.com or Leslie Lindsay Davis. If you want to just drop an email to me, I answer each and every single one of them. It's not a virtual assistant. And I really do love to hear from people. And I'm happy to reach out. Also, the books are all available on Amazon, of course. Mm. And just reach out. And I would love to hear from you.
Well, I think that's, you know, it's just, you know, again, I just want to reiterate that, you are, and I've said this to people when they said, you know, who are you? Could they know I was going to record today? And they were like, well, who's your guest? And I just can't say enough kind things about the, not just who you are, but your just beautiful spirit. And so, you know, if there's a person that people don't know personally, like you, hear it from me. This is a person on this earth that you could put trust in what you say. And so I'm so grateful for you showing up again here and blessing this podcast, Miss Leslie.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It is such a treat to get to talk to you again when I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you so much. And so God bless you, and we'll be seeing you soon again.